Good evening. Welcome to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ryan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 10. Please welcome our panel this evening. We've got Laura and Paul. All right, so we are on step 10, which states, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I'm going to read from the first paragraph pertaining to this on page 84, and then they'll each share for a few minutes on the reading. So, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code.
Hey everybody, my name is Paul Jeffries and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello.
There is a lot to unpack in there, but first I just want to start off. My sobriety date is April 10th of 2010. And that's when I was finally beaten into submission by alcohol, and I'm really glad that I was, man. I have a home group. It's AA 101. We meet over at the hospital, Norfolk Sentara. It's Sunday at 11 in the morning, and we focus on the first three steps. So please come out, man. We'd love to have you guys. We have a brand new room. There are very comfortable chairs now, and we have two coffee pots. So come on out. It's a good time. Yeah, man. So step 10. Take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. You know, this is just so huge because this is assuming that I've done the first nine and that I've completely just cleaned house. I've gotten all that crap out of the way. I've gotten all these terrible things that I've done out in the open. Somebody else knows about it besides myself and God. And I'm supposed to be making amends and hoping that my defects are relieved from me. And you know, and I'm in the process of making amends and I'm cleaning the slate. You know, I love to drink, man. I love what alcohol did for me, guys. It made me bulletproof. And, you know, I remember the first time I got drunk. It was a bottle of whiskey that I stole from my aunt. And I halved it with a buddy of mine. It was Seagram 7. It was delicious. And we got blackout drunk the first time we ever drank, and it was great. And I really enjoyed that, man, because I just didn't care. My whole life, I've cared so much about what you think and what I think and what they think. I'm so in my head, and the hamster's always running. And when I drink, that pressure release valve is just switched, and I can finally sink back in the couch and relax. And shucks, man, that was when I was 13, and I just kept doing that for years and years because I love the way that alcohol makes me feel. And I didn't know until I was beat up enough to come into AA and then sit around for a year and do nothing and then start working the steps that I got an allergy to alcohol, right? And basically that means when I drink, I get real thirsty, and I can't stop drinking because I love to drink. I love how I feel when I'm drunk. And I've also got an obsession of the mind, which means I'm always going to drink again. My brain's just always trying to talk me into another drink. And I didn't realize this. I thought it was just a nice guy that drank too much. And so the reason I'm bringing all this up is that I've got a brain that is going to make me drink again forever. It's just what it is. I love it. You know, it's just like, hey, man, you can't turn a pickle into a cucumber. I'm a pickle. All right. So what do I do about that? So it suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any wrong. You know, this I've actually had some recent experience with this. I mean, this is a whole different way of living for me. I don't know about you guys, but I'm not a very honest person. I'm not very forthright. I usually run instead of standing up for what I believe in or what I think is the right thing. I generally just kind of walk away because it's just so much easier to just walk away from things and pretend they never happen. And so I was at work, and I'm in a position where I supervise a team of agents, and I'm a senior supervisor there. And so they had a new person sitting with us, and I got on a roll with a buddy of mine that I sit next to, and we were just making all these crash jokes, and we were talking about like how much money we want to make, and I'm going to be honest, it was pretty disgusting. I'm pretty embarrassed about it. And to top it off, she's a heavy set person, and I made a joke about weight, and I just felt disgusting when I walked out of the building. I just felt so gross. And usually what would have happened when I was drinking or when I was first sober is I would just kind of shove that under the rug and just forget that happened. But every time I saw her in the office, I would run the other way, or I would never talk to her again, probably is my favorite go-to. Just cut you out of my life forever. And so instead of that, though, I walked out of the office and picked up my phone. I called two or three guys in the program, told them what I did, was actually excited to make amends to her when I saw her in the office the next day. And I did it as soon as she walked in the door. Now, that is not me. That's not me, man. I'm the guy, I will never talk to you again for the rest of my life. But I was excited to talk to this lady. How is that possible? Like, how is that possible? It's because I'm working a program and I'm doing the steps like they say to in the book. And I got to tell you, man, that's just not me. It says we've entered in the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. What does that even mean? I don't know for you, but for me, I mean, I was overwhelmed in my first couple years of sobriety, which I now realize sounds really silly. But I was really overwhelmed for years, actually, that I should be different. Like, I should be a better AA than I am, or I should be more godly than I am, or I should just be more. I really thought, like, I should just be more. Like, this is not good enough. Whatever I do is not good enough in my program. And I got to tell you, man, it took me a long time to get comfortable with just trying to get better on a daily basis, trying to do better. I'm not a guy that has like an in-between. And my sponsor said, hey, man, you know, if you continue to do this thing and you help other guys, you might be doing this for quite a while. Can you just think that there might be some room for improvement in the next 60 years if you stay sober? And I was like, oh, well, I guess so, man. That makes sense. I can get on with that. And so I guess really the point that I'm trying to make is that I'm just trying to live sober. Like, it comes to a point in sobriety where the drinking, it tells us we stop fighting alcohol. I might be reading a little bit of ahead on the paragraphs, but it tells us that we stop fighting alcohol. So if I'm not fighting alcohol, then what's left? This program actually isn't about just not drinking. It's about living a sober life. I have no idea how to do that. And so I turned to God, I turned to a sponsor, I turned to anybody other than myself who's in the program longer than me, and actually, I want to retract that statement. I'll stop the recording and start over. I just turn to anybody who's got anything to offer me, man, because I don't know. And I think that that's an amazing thing. It says we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. It doesn't say, you know, I guess really I just thought that this stuff was going to be gone. Like, I thought I was just going to be a good guy after I got through the steps. And apparently my selfishness and my resentment, all that stuff just comes along for the ride. It's just, how do I deal with it on a daily basis? And I can either, you know, forget that it happened and try to just bludgeon my way through life, or I can have this reflection and I can think about, where was I wrong? What have I done today that's been a little wrong? How can I make that better? I talk to other people about it. Like, I'm that guy that just shoves everything under the rug until the rug has a lump in it that's so big that I can't walk over it, and then I'll just go around it and get a new rug. Like, I just don't care to deal with anything because it's worse. It's the worst. So when it says that, you know, when I'm really bent out of shape or when I'm messed up, I think about other people. That's not me either. Guys, I haven't, before I came into AA, man, I didn't really have a thought of anybody for years, to be honest with you. Like, I might remember your birthday because Facebook told me about it, or I might remember your phone number because I found it somewhere, but that's like, I don't care about anybody, to be honest with you. I care about myself, and I care about feeling better, and usually that meant that I was drinking. And so when I come in here and you guys are telling me that the way to get around my problems is to face them head on and then think about other people, like, it just doesn't make sense. I've never done that my entire life. But I tell you what, man, when I'm really been out of shape and I'm freaking out about something and I can't think straight, calling another person, just asking them how they're doing, it's amazing what happens on the other end of that phone call. I don't just start spewing in their ear. I actually ask how they're doing. And I realize that they have a life and that they're doing stuff and I'm not the only human being around. And that's pretty freeing because it's just, I'm just not caught in myself every second of the day. Most of the day, but not all of the day. So that's what I got for that paragraph.
Hey everybody, my name is Laura and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Laura.
Sober February 23rd, 2008. I hate doing this part. Cornerstone is my home group. Boop, boop. Y'all know that. And I'm here. So we're on step 10. I used to think that I couldn't really begin step 10 until I completed my ninth step. And thank God that that's not what it says. It says, we continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So I vigorously commence this way of living as I clean up my past. So right there, it gives me permission to continue on with step 10, even if I haven't completed my all of my amends. And that was absolutely necessary for me. Step 10, I used to get that confused with step 11. I thought that the nightly questions were a part of step 10, and that's actually not the case. But so step 10 is about perseverance, and I am a chronic alcoholic, and I have a chronic alcoholic mind. I think that the reason why Bill felt it necessary to add six additional steps is because he knew that we needed a way to continuously maintain this way of life. And step 10 forces me to look at myself every day. And kind of what Paul was touching on, you know, I quit drinking, and the only thing that changed for me is that I wasn't getting DUIs anymore, really. I still had the same mind, the same personality, the same coping mechanisms that I've had for years. And, you know, I've been through this process several times, and my first time around, you know, I did the best that I could. And I could probably tell you that I wasn't practicing step 10 as a way of life my first time around. And I think that there's a lot of reasons why I'm one of those people that had to get some time, and one of those people that had to have my ego rebuild itself, and then I had to fall again. and I drank again. And what my relapse taught me was that this is really serious. I cannot rely on my mind to keep me sober. I cannot rely on the meetings to keep me sober. I can't rely on my sponsor to keep me sober. A job, a boyfriend, none of that stuff is enough to provide the treatment that I need. And so step 10, when it's talking about, like, and kind of what you just said, I thought too, once I completed the 12 steps, like, I was going to be good, man. And I got really cocky, and I was one of those people that would try to impress you with my big book knowledge, and, you know, I would preach to people. I did everything that it says not to do. And it tells me that, you know, I was acting like my stuff didn't stink anymore. Like, my problems, my character defects were a part of the past. You know, I used to be like this when I used to drink, you know. When I very first got sober, I was like that. But I wasn't telling you the truth about that I'm still like that today, you know. When I go home, the stuff that I'm obsessing about, you know, when I get mad at people, you know, when I get upset because I don't get my way, and when I'm praying to God, I'm asking God to deliver me the things on my wish list, you know, I'm not telling people the truth about that stuff. I'm just telling you what I want you to think about me, the picture of my stage character. And so when I'm looking at this step, it's telling me that I will make new mistakes. It doesn't say if. You know, continue to set right any new mistakes. So that's going to happen, and that continues to happen in my life. It doesn't matter how long I'm around the program. I'm going to make some more mistakes. And I'm actually glad that it says that, because it kind of gives me a little bit of a break to be a human. So I've entered the world of the Spirit. What does that mean? The first time I think I really got a little glimpse of what that meant was when I was 3 years sober this time around. Went through probably the most traumatic thing I've ever faced in my entire life. I had a boyfriend commit suicide when I broke up with him. And I very badly wanted to check out. And I remember my sponsor was talking to me at the time, and I was trying to ask her, I'm like, you know, can I start taking, like, Xanax or something? I needed something to just, like, treat my mind, because I couldn't. Reality was a little bit too much for me to deal with at that time in my life. And she talked to me about trust and faith and tapping in and living into the realm of the Spirit and not relying on man-made things to solve my problems. And that's not what I wanted to hear, because all I wanted was something, some magic little pill to take everything away. And she said just enough that made just enough sense to make me want to hold on and trust into this whole realm of the Spirit thing. And that's not an easy thing to do. My next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. That's the whole point of this thing. And I forgot. Actually, I don't even think I forgot. I just didn't know. I didn't know that that was the point of step 10. Am I doing that? Am I growing spiritually? Am I growing in my understanding of myself and my fellows? And sometimes I am, and sometimes I take about 20 steps back. You know, when people step on my toes, when I feel slighted, or if I feel like somebody's done me wrong, I have no understanding at all. And that's why I need this. Effectiveness, the degree to which something is successful in producing a desired result. How effective am I in Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, am I getting the desired results? And if I'm not, you know, where am I lacking? So this is not an overnight matter. Again, thank God. It's going to continue for a lifetime. It says the word continue 4 times in step 10. Continue, 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 continue. And then it tells me when these things crop up, so it's going to happen. So when I'm full of fear, when I'm resentful, when I'm being selfish again, when I'm being dishonest, and sometimes, you know, I like to pride myself in that I don't lie to people today, but guess who I lie to all the time? Myself. So I need a lot of help with this, and it gives me very specific steps in which to take, you know, in step 10. Number one, I have to watch. I have to be mindful of myself. I will be mindful of you guys all day long. But to be mindful of myself. Then two, it says, I ask God. So I have to pray at once. So as soon as I'm pissed off about something, as soon as I'm sad about something, as soon as I'm full of fear and anxiety and having a panic attack at once, when these emotions crop up, I pray and I ask God to remove them. It's not my job to fix this, but I want it so bad to be my job to fix this. And I'll try, and then I fail, and I fall, and then I have to do this. Three, I have to discuss it with somebody immediately. Sometimes I sit on it for like a week or so. But I discuss with somebody, a sponsor, another trusted fellow in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then they can help me differentiate the true from the false. Because a lot of times I think that I know what's going on and I'm missing something. And so when I tell somebody else what's going on in my crazy little brain, they can help me shift my perspective just enough to see the bigger picture. And then they can help me decipher whether or not I've caused anybody else harm. Because sometimes I'll be like, heck no, I didn't hurt them. They hurt me. That's definitely not always the case either. And then the last part is resolutely turn my thoughts to somebody that I can help. And I can tell you that absolutely, like, when all else fails, when I'm suffering, you know, because my resentments and my fears don't always go, you know, God doesn't always relieve it at once. I pray at once, but he doesn't always take it away. And I think sometimes he finds good purpose in my suffering. But at once, I can turn my thoughts to somebody else. I can pick up the phone and ask somebody that, you know, might be having a worse time than I am, you know, what's going on with you? And walk shoulder to shoulder, and every time I do that, things just get a little bit lighter and a little less serious. Last sentence, love and tolerance of others is our code. So that's a moral code right there. I want you to love and tolerate me, but, you know, do I do this for others? And it's this is a discipline. It's a spiritual discipline, and it's very... It's an ideal I would like to live up to, but, you know, I'm not really great at that part, I'll be honest with you. And I do have faith that, you know, the longer that I'm around here and I practice this and I'm reminded of what my purpose is, that God does help me with these things. He can help me be tolerant of other people. He can help me love people when I don't want to. And that's all I have.
All right, thank you. Continuing on page 84. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
Yeah, man. You're right. So I think that this is the promise if we're doing this fit spiritual conditioning. And, you know, I think it's the same sanity that it's talking to in step two. Like, it's not going to make me, this does not make me a sane person. Because, guys, I got to tell you, we're kind of a bunch of nut jobs. But what it does is it removes that sanity, that insanity of the first drink. Right? Like, that's what we're talking about in step two when it's like, hey, we removed the insanity of the first drink. This is the same thing. For this time, the sanity in regards to the first drink will have returned. Maybe it wouldn't have returned. I never really had sanity against the first drink. But I've got that sanity now. And, you know, what a nice little ideal. We've ceased fighting anything or anyone. You know, I have that a couple days at a time here and there. And it's really nice. And I got to tell you, it's on the direct back end of me really living a spiritual life, like doing these steps on a daily, consistent basis. That's when I'm in that zone where I'm just like, hey, man, everything's good. I'm going to handle whatever comes my way, good or bad, indifferent. It doesn't matter. I'm just going to handle it, and I'm going to go home and be with my family. And then I take care of them, and then I go to sleep. And that's a really nice day. Like I said, it comes more often now, and it stays for longer. Before, when I first got sober and I first started working the steps, it was literally like 3 hours at a time when I was, like, I had this feeling of being spiritually fit and that I was okay and everything was good. And, you know, the duration's gotten longer and I'm having that more often, but it's only a direct result of doing this step on a daily basis. I like a couple of things that Laura really said, that this stuff's going to crop up. Like, these things are going to continue to happen for the rest of our life, right? Okay, I get it. If I know that that's going to happen, And this is the counter to that. Well, then I guess I should do this consistently too, because then that will counter the consistent screw-ups I'll have. So this is nice. It's a nice balance. But, you know, when it talks about not being interested in liquor, my experience was that I just drank all the fun out of drinking, man. I really did. I wasn't an everyday drinker, and I didn't lose a lot. I was pretty young when I came in here, but I was just beat down, man. I was spiritually dead. I was morally dead. I had nothing. I went out not to even drink the last night, and I got so drunk that I woke up under a car. And not in the gutter. It was actually in the middle of the street. I was covered in throw up, almost run over. And that's how I almost died. That's really sad. It just is what it is. But that's where I got. And I woke up, and I knew that I was just beat. I don't know how to explain it other than that. I just woke up, and I knew I was beat. And, you know, I'm Paul Jeffries, damn it. I've never been beat by anything. And I just woke up that morning just completely hungover and still wearing that same throw-up coat. And I was just like, man, I'm beat, dude. Like, I got nothing. I've got nothing. And that's great. That's such a good place to be, because that's the only time I'm willing to do something different. And when I woke up, though, I really didn't want to drink again. I didn't. The thought of drinking just disgusted me. I don't know if it was, like, the half gallon of Talisker Dew that I drank that night. I don't know what it was. That's really okay scotch, actually. But I just woke up and I was beat, man, and I didn't want to drink. And I also was unwilling to do anything. So I didn't want to drink, but I was unwilling to do anything to not drink. So I had this really awful year in AA. I was just in a chair. I wasn't doing AA. I was just in chairs in AA. And it was miserable, guys, because somewhere along the line, like, the alcohol had become my answer to anything. Having a great day, let's drink. Having a bad day, gotta drink. You know, I tripped, stubbed my toe, gotta drink. It was everything to me. And so if that's my solution and you take my solution away, like, I don't know what to do with my hands. Like, I don't know what to do. But I'll tell you what, I feel super uncomfortable. I love what David says about it. I felt better. Feel everything better. I feel pain better. I feel anger better. I feel resentment better. I hate being sober. Ugh. It's the worst when I don't have a solution. Because I I've come to realize this over time that, and this might shock some of you, and this is just what I've come to believe over time. I don't have a drinking problem. I've got a sober problem. The solution to that problem turned out to be alcohol, and I got an allergy and a mind that's going to make me drink again. It's real simple. But if I've got a sober problem and you take my solution to that sober problem away, I am miserable. Just friggin' miserable. I don't know what to do. I want to peel my skin off and run away. All the reason I'm telling you this is that I woke up that morning 100%. I'm never drinking again, man. I will never, ever, for the rest of my life, take a freaking drink. Well, guess what? My dry time got so bad that I was either at a I'm going to drink again or I'm going to try to do maybe AA. And I was a toss-up, to be honest with you. I wasn't taking this moral high road, like, I'm going to give AA a try. It was either I'm going to go do that again, and I really don't want to spend another 8 years doing that to myself or stomping on other people, or I'll try AA, I guess. But that's only after I've lost everything due to drinking and then sat in a year without doing anything in the program and been miserable for another year. That's the only time I'll do anything different. And so, you know, I didn't want to drink, but I got to that point again. And it's because I have that obsession in the mind. Like, I get so uncomfortable sober, I don't know what to do. And drinking turns out to be the only answer. When I get scared enough, down enough, beat up enough, I'm going to drink again. Like, it's just going to happen. But what's really cool is that if I'm spiritually fit and I'm doing this step on a daily basis and I'm really trying to live this life, it becomes a non-issue. It really does. And it says, that's the magic of it. I mean, that's great words. That's the magic of it. I just thought that alcohol was always going to be a problem. I just really did, man. I just kind of was okay with that. You know, I got two parents, one sober in AA for like almost 30 years. The other one's of just a very serious alcoholic and in a very unfortunate case. But I knew that those were my two options, and I definitely didn't want to be that guy. I wanted to be like my mom, and she's 30 years sober. But I had no idea how to do that, and I just kind of figured I was always just going to drink. I just figured. And so it just comes, and that's the miracle of it. We're not fighting, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky or we afraid. And I've been through, especially in my early sobriety, man, I was so cocky. Like you were kind of talking about, I was like, yeah, man, I'm never going to drink again. Like, I would just spit all this ridiculous. I don't even know what I said for the first couple years. It was awful, I'm sure. And I'm sorry if any of you were around to witness that. I do know that I cried a lot because I was beat down, and I'm not too afraid to admit that. Nor are we afraid. So it's not like, you know, I wasn't on the wagon for keeps. Like, I'm never going to drink again. I wasn't that guy, eventually. And then I also wasn't afraid. I remember being so afraid in early sobriety that the other foot was going to drop and some, like, I was just going to get drunk again. Out of nowhere. Like, I just thought that was going to happen. I was so scared. I was like, oh my God, I can't walk down that aisle. I can't do this. I can't go to that party. I can't be around that guy. Like, this is crazy. I was just so afraid, like, somebody's going to hold me down and pour liquor down my throat. Guess what? Nobody cares. Like, that's the crazy thing. It's all in my head, and that's the insanity of what we deal with, right? We're so sure that everybody's thinking about what we're doing. Like, oh my God, nobody cares. So I've been kind of put in this place because, and only, guys, only because I worked the steps to the best of my ability. Yeah, I've gone through hits and misses. I've really screwed this program up, to be honest with you, and I'll talk about that in the next paragraph. I've done that. That's fine. If you haven't, you know, good luck. It's cool, man. I don't care about alcohol because I know that that's not the problem. My problem is I don't know how to live sober. And this is a recipe for living sober. So when I figure that out and I realize that nobody's going to get me drunk, pour liquor down my throat, and I don't have to be afraid and I don't have to be worried about this, I can get on with life. Because that's why we got sober, is to live sober. Live a sober life. I don't know about you, but that's what I want. And so I don't care about it. But I do care about being sober and living sober and growing along those lines. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And I got to be honest with you. I didn't give a crap about the spiritual program of recovery for a lot of years. I was just scared enough to not drink again and dumb enough to realize that I didn't have all the answers. And if you're not here, if you're not like floating and meditating all the time and praying and just having this amazing relationship with God, relax. As long as you try, it will come. I didn't know that. My sponsor used to tell me for like 5 years, hey man, you pray on your knees. I was like, okay. I never did it. Just never did it. I didn't do anything to grow spiritually. And guess what? I got that result. I did not grow spiritually, and I got into some really weird times in my sobriety. I never drank again. But man, it got weird, guys. Please don't do that to yourself. If you try, it will come. It comes over time. It takes time, but guess what? I'm in it to win it, right? I'm in it for the long haul because I know that I'm screwed when it comes to alcohol. and I can't stay sober on my own, and this is the only thing that's ever helped, so I guess I'll take the suggestions that your book has. That's it.
Thank you. Cease fighting everything and everyone. In regards to alcohol, I remember not being able to imagine a future life without being able to use alcohol, and that terrified me. When I got to my, when I was laying in jail, waking up for the first time, I had to get a bondsman to get out, and I was like, oh crap, this is getting serious. I was at that crossroads that it talks about, can't imagine my life with or without alcohol. And I knew, I didn't understand exactly what alcoholism really entailed or encompassed for me, but I knew that I, my entire life revolved around it. And I was terrified that I was not going to be the type of person that could get this thing. When I was getting ready to go off to rehab for 2 months, I said a prayer to God, and I was like, God, if I'm not the type of person that can get sober and stay sober and do the right about face and turn my life around, I was like, just kill me. Just kill me. That's pretty pathetic, but that's how I felt. So ceasing fighting anything and anyone, even alcohol. So yes, the sanity that it's talking about is about alcohol and my reaction to it. And when I was newly sober, I was hypersensitive to the sights and the smells and the commercials. And when I would go out to eat in restaurants, if other people got to drink, I was envious of them. And I couldn't imagine not reacting that way. I thought it was always going to be that way. Every time I went to the grocery store, I was going to have to like go like this and avoid eye contact with the beer and wine aisle. You know, when I went home for family gatherings, I was going to have to ask my family to please abstain from drinking in front of me because it bothers me and it's going to make me want to drink. I thought it was going to be like that forever. But that's not what happens. When I take the actions and I get to here, and honestly, I don't even remember exactly at what point it was when I just wasn't thinking about alcohol anymore, just kind of disappeared. And it tells me that I'm going to be seldom interested in liquor. And if tempted, and I have been tempted, you know, it's been 8 years, and I've had a couple brief moments where I considered it, where I was really stressed out and I was sitting at home on the couch and I was like, I know what would fix this. I can go to the store, get a bottle of wine, have a couple glasses, and feel that ease and comfort. You know, so for a few brief moments I would have that thought. But what happens to me now is I do recoil from it like a hot flame. It says that I will react sanely and normally, and that it starts to happen automatically. So yeah, that absolutely has happened to me. The thought of drinking to solve my problems or make me feel better does not occur to me anymore. However, it comes back if I'm not diligent, and it has come back for me. This promise about being placed in a position of neutrality, being safe and protected, that is all I have ever wanted in my life, is to feel safe and protected. And this is giving that to me. This way of life is showing me that I can have that feeling of security. So to be honest with you, this isn't just about the sanity about drinking for me anymore, because like we touched on before, once the obsession to drink has been removed, I still have an obsessive mind, and I will find something to fixate on and try to, you know, force my will into it, because, you know, living a spiritual way of life and practicing spiritual principles does not come naturally for me. I still want ease and comfort, and I want it as fast and as soon as possible. You know, so now my go-to is not, you know, pick up a drink to make myself feel better. It might be, let me go freaking max out my credit cards and buy a whole bunch of fancy new clothes. Or, oh, that guy over there, he's really cute. You know, let me go see what's up with him. I like to do that because it makes me feel good about myself. My ego constantly is trying to rebuild itself. And I forget that. You remember in the beginning when it talks about a price had to be paid? The reduction of self-centeredness. My ego has to be smashed. So why is it that I get to this part in the book and I get to these steps and my ego reemerges? And it's very important to me that you guys know who I am. It's very important to me that you respect me. I'm missing something if I'm feeling that way. So I have to cease fighting anything and anyone, and that's not an easy thing for somebody like me to do because I am a born fighter. I fight all the time, and I will keep fighting until I've just beat myself into the ground. And you know, I don't know why I'm so stubborn, and it has to get that bad for me before I surrender. But it's necessary for me to be willing to do it. This is asking me to do, to humble myself, to admit that I'm wrong, to admit that my selfish motives have hurt other people in my life, whether I intended it or not, to confess these things. This is hard. But if I want to be put in a position of neutrality and feel safe and protected, then I have to. I have to be willing. At least be willing. Don't try. Just be willing. And then it tells me that this problem will be removed. So whether it's my obsession to drink, an obsession with the relationship, an obsession with money, power, and prestige, that the problem will be removed. And that's pretty dang cool. It tells me not to be cocky. Don't be cocky, Laura. And not to be afraid. And that as long as I stay there, then I'll be okay. But if I get away from there, as it's going to warn in the next part, then, you know, here comes the red flag. So I'll stop there.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next we'll go to page 85. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will.
Yeah, man. That's funny while you were talking about it can look like other things in a drink. I was just today like, well, this $500 tent is 25% off, and if I take this money out of my savings account while I'm about to have another baby and I'm about to put my son through Montessori school, and I'm just like, well, you know, maybe I can make the funds. It's just amazing. I probably spent like 3 hours today just screwing around on the internet looking at tents. All right. So I got some stuff I got to do, right? Look, we're growing, right? Okay, so thanks for reminding me. So it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Man, I am that guy. I will do just enough to feel good enough and then stop everything. Because all I want is to feel good enough. I don't really want to continue doing this stuff on a daily basis. I just want to get through this problem that I'm dealing with now, and then I'm good to go. It's just how I live my life. I want to get out of trouble real quick. Got him. Right? Like that's just my mentality. I'm just always trying to get over on people. I didn't realize what a con man I was until I came in here. And I also work in insurance sales. The thing is that I just want to feel good enough. And to be honest with you, I kind of like that screw up. Because I've always been that guy. I build it up and tear it down. What a screw up. And then I build it up. I'm like a phoenix. I'm rising from the ashes all the time. And then I just destroy everything. And then I come right back. I love that feeling of to be honest with you, I kind of like feeling bad. It's comfortable, if I'm being honest. Because it allows me to rationalize crummy behavior. Like, let's just call a spade a spade. I like feeling miserable because I can act and do stupid things and not care about the consequences. When everything's great, and everything's going really well, that Paul just looks like a jerk, but when everything's going bad, it's understandable. And I live my life like that for so long, man. I really did. And I can even be caught in that in my sobriety, you know. So it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Man, it's so easy. Like, it's really easy to let that happen. I've had experiences in my sobriety where I haven't drank again, thank God, but man, I've been uncomfortable. I just stopped doing what we are supposed to be doing on a daily basis. It's really simple. My sponsor gave me a checklist of daily stuff to do. I'll do enough of that to feel good. The other stuff, I couldn't be bothered. There was something on the radio I wanted to hear. I made 3 phone calls, but it was at 7 in the morning when I knew these guys wouldn't pick up because they were probably sleeping because they work at a bar. You know what I mean? Like, so it's weird how I can manipulate this stuff. It's just amazing. And what I have in here, and I put this carrot in my book every time I see, you know, how they're talking about, like, alcohol, subtle alcohol. I always have... alcohol is a subtle and patient foe. Because my worst nightmare is getting 40 years into this thing and just drifting away and going and drinking again. And I know that that's going to happen. Like, I know it. If I'm not doing this on a daily basis, I'm going to drink again. And I think that that's really the point where I started doing this daily stuff on a regular basis, was when I fully got a realization that I'm screwed when it comes to alcohol and I'm always going to drink again. I'm always going to drink again. Just because I've been sober for a few years doesn't mean anything. It really doesn't. It's what am I doing today? And I forget about that so often because I'm like, oh, yeah, Paul Jeffries, I've been sober for 6 years. Blah. Like, who cares? The drink's just a couple blocks away. Like, it's just crazy, man. It's crazy what happens in our head. So we're not cured of alcoholism. All we have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Amen, right? Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into our activities. I don't know what God's will is, but I'll tell you what. I stop imposing my will a lot better when I'm praying, asking, and being willing to do whatever God has in front of me. Because I got to be honest, His will is not for me to spend $500 on a tent right now. It would be financially ruinous. But I don't care. I don't care because it's my will. I want to go camp. I want to hike the whole Appalachian Trail. I need that 6 months by myself, to myself. And my wife will just figure it out, right? Like, this is what goes on. That's my will, right? My will has always screwed me over. Whenever I've gotten what I wanted, it's never been good enough. And then when I realize that, I get angry and I want more. And then that's not good enough, right? I'm never okay. I'm just never okay. But I'll tell you what, man, when I'm really actually doing this step and living this life and trying to do the best I can on a spiritual basis, I don't know about you guys, but I've become okay with being okay. I just hit this medium where I'm not the king of the world and I'm not some piece of crud under a rock at the bottom of a cave. Those are the two, that's where I live. I'm either the best or the worst. Now I'm just okay. And I didn't think that was ever going to be good enough, but apparently it is. It's a pretty amazing thing. How can I best serve you? Your will, not mine, be done. When I'm praying that prayer and I'm going out into the world ready to help other people and not be so consumed with Paul Jeffries and this 2-inch square in the center of my forehead, what a great day. It usually goes by really quickly. Everything falls into place and I'm doing okay. Everything's good. When I wake up and I'm just thinking about myself and I skip my prayer and meditation, or I go out of the house without reading and I'm just thinking about Paul, what does Paul want? What does Paul want to do? It's miserable every time, I promise. Because what I want is never, it's never what I need. If I'm being honest with you, what I want is never what I need. And when I'm really praying and I'm trying to live this way of life, things are just put in front of me and I'm given the grace to take care of them. And that's amazing, because that's not what I bring to the table naturally at all. That's what I got.
All right, resting on our laurels. That's funny that my name is Laura. I like to rest on my laurels. So laurels is to rely on my past achievements instead of working to maintain or advance my status or my reputation. And that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And it warns me if I don't do this and I'm headed for trouble, so I can absolutely attest that the obsession returns if you're an alcoholic like me. Mm-hmm. And at some point, you know, something's got to give. And for me, I ended up picking up a drink again and had to experiment a little bit more. So I'm not cured of alcoholism. I had to look up the definition of reprieve. I thought it just meant a break, but it actually means to cancel or postpone the punishment.
That's great.
The punishment of what happens when I pick up a drink. Hmm. I am the Tasmanian devil when I pick up a drink. There's no predicting what's going to happen, but more than likely, it's going to be really bad. So I have this daily reprieve contingent, meaning it's existing only if I maintain this thing, my spiritual condition. So every day I have to look at, you know, what's the difference between what I want, what Laura's will is, versus what do I believe that God would have me do or have me be. So it's not always, I want to do something, I'm a fixer, I'm a doer, I just constantly got to do something. And this is teaching me how to be still and just be. Like, be okay just being me. I've always kind of gotten really perplexed about this question of what, how do I know the difference, you know, what is God's will for my life? And the only thing I know for certain is that God wants me to be healthy. He wants me to be happy. And he wants me to be helpful. And I can't be any of that if I'm in my cups, if I'm either drinking or if I'm suffering from self-will run riot. I know today that when I am not doing God's will, life seems really hard. Mm-hmm. I feel like I am swimming upstream, like just things are not flowing. So anytime I'm facing indecision about something, you know, I have to ask myself, like, what am I really feeling? You know, if there's a lot of anxiety and tension, then I'm probably going against the grain with God's will. Sometimes when I have to make a decision, so here's what it looks like now. I didn't do this my first time in sobriety, but anytime I feel like I have to make a decision, whether it's about applying for a new job, whether it's about getting into a relationship with somebody, I've been disciplined to ask God, is this where you want me to be? Before, I would say, God, please make this where you want me to be. Now I say, God, you know what I want, but if this is not your will, then make it abundantly clear to me. And be careful when you say that, because he will. Every time I have wanted something for myself, I've been at this company that I'm with now for 10 years now. I've applied for 6 different jobs within the company and always came up second best. Woo, that was okay for my ego. And every time I would get like a door slammed in my face or get a no, feeling that rejection and getting really down on myself, later on it was revealed to me why the door was closed. It meant God said no, and he said no for a reason. He wanted me somewhere else. And sometimes it's like, you know, when you go bowling, you need those little bumper ramps for children. Like, that's what I need in my life, and God helps me. If I can just be open to it, every time I run into a wall or I get a no or somebody rejects me or whatever, he's trying to get me on the path. He's like, nope, nope, don't go over there. Come over here. And, you know, every time I'm like, I look back later on, never feels this way at the time, but, you know, every guy that rejected me or left me and every job that our interviewer that said no to me, later on I'm like, oh, wow, that's why. Because I sell myself short every time. Now I look back and I'm like, thank God I didn't end up with him, you know? If I got those jobs before, they weren't really jobs I wanted. I just needed more money, you know? And now I'm doing something that I love. I just had to be patient and have faith and keep going and keep doing what it's telling me to do. And God just kind of like led the way. Sometimes I fight and I have to veer off the path a little bit and get beat up some more. And then I submit or I surrender and I do this again. And as long as I don't stay away off the path for too long and the obsession doesn't return, I'm going to be all right. And I know that. I know that without a shadow of a doubt, that no matter what life brings my way, I'm going to be okay. And there's a purpose in all of this chaos we call life. So yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah.
All right, thank you guys very much. Let's see what we got here. All right, we're going to pass the seven tradition basket.
Good job, friend.
The seven traditions states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Do we have any AA-related announcements?
I'm Stacy, I'm Alcoholics and Addicts.
Thanks, Casey.
Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands.
Wow.
Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety we would like to welcome you?
My name's Greg
and I am in. Hey, Greg. Welcome, buddy.
We have literature available on the table over there. The pamphlets are free. The big books are for sale. Please see any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, please see me after the meeting. I'll be up here after we close the meeting. And reminders, smokers, please use the buck can provided outside, so let's stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And in closing, we would like to thank the panel again for sharing. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the steps discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on Colonial and 22nd. And can I get someone to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Please.
My name is Ashton.
I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ashton.
Our book is meant to be suggested only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do today for the man who is still living. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that our relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great path for us. Abandon yourself. Commit your thoughts to him and to compel us. Clear away the record of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you charge the road past us. May God bless you in Jesus' name.
Thank you very much. We will close the Lord's Prayer.
Charge the road past us.
Keeps us sober.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory.
Back. It works when you work it. It won't if you don't. Then you'll drink again.